နော်ဝေဆက်သွယ်ရေးကုမ္ပဏီတယ်လီနော်ရဲ့မြန်မာပြည်လုပ်ငန်းခွဲကိုလက်မနော်စီဝိုင်းအုပ်စု M1 ထံရောင်းချမှုကိုမြန်မာ NASA ကအတည်ပြုလိုက်တယ်လို့မလ18ရက်မှာအဆိုပါကုမ္ပဏီနှစ်ခုစလုံးကထုတ်ပြန်ခဲ့ကြပါတယ်
အမေရိကန်ဒေါ်လာ105သန်းနဲ့ညီများတဲ့နော်ဝေးငွေကြေးခရိုနာတန်900နဲ့ရောင်းချလိုက်တာဖြစ်ပြီးအဲ့ဒီထက်ကကန်ဒေါ်လာ55သန်းကိုတော့ငါးနှစ်ကျော်ပြည့်ချိန်မှုရွှေ့ဆိုင်ထားတယ်လို့သိရပါတယ
်မြန်မာနိုင်ငံမှာ၈နှစ်ကြာလုပ်ကိုင်ခဲ့တဲ့တယ်လီနော့မြန်မာရဲ့ဆက်သွယ်ရေးလုပ်ငန်းအားလုံးကိုစစ်တပ်နဲ့နှိစက်တဲ့ချွေပြိုင်းဖြူကုမ္ပဏီနဲ့လက်ဗနွန်အခြေဆိုင် M1 ဂရုထံအမေရိကန်ဒေါ်လာ105သန်းနဲ့ရောင်းချမှုကိုစစ်ကောင်စီရဲ့မြန်မာနိုင်ငံရင်းနှီးမြှုပ်နှံမှုကော်မရှင်ကမတ်လ15ရက်နေ့ကအပြီးသတ်အတည်ပြုပေးလိုက်ပါပြီ
Inside Myanmar podcast stands with the Burmese people resisting the tyrannical military rule. For those now listening to this in country, please know that you're not aloneOur platform and the thousands of listeners choosing to hear these stories keep you in our hearts. Far more people than you might know are sending you metta or including you in their prayers or thoughts. Your courage and your sacrifice are not going unnoticed. You're an inspiration to the world. Thank you for allowing us to play some small role in your revolution. May you be safe and may you be free.
Welcome back. Today, I am lucky enough to be joined by my guest, Nikolai Prutz. We will be discussing, of all things, Telenor and Telenor's involvement in the Myanmar context and their very controversial pull out of Myanmar after the coup, which resulted in significant data being handed over to the military, compromising potentially millions of Myanmar citizens and democracy advocates. But before we get into that, Nikolai, thank you very much for joining us. And I want to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself and the work that you've been doing for the audience.
Yes, thank you very much for being here. My name is Nikolai. I've been working in the IT industry most of my life as an entrepreneur. I'm born in Oslo in Norway. I graduated from University of St. Andrews in Scotland. I've worked internationally most of my life. And in 2010 and 11, I was and 12 and 13, I was lucky to visit Myanmar and to become to make friendship with a lot of people there at that time, which was really, really nice. So that's how I came to discover Myanmar, because I was founding together with some other companies an initiative thatis called Partnership for Change in Norway, and so we were working with the Oslo Center for Peace and Human Rights, led by Mr. Bonnevik, who was the former Prime Minister of Norway, and together with him I went to Myanmar in 2011 and met with Aung San Suu Kyi just after her release from house arrest.So that was my first, visit to Myanmar. Yeah.
And I understand, of course, you've written a book, which has only been published in Norwegian at the moment. But can you tell us a little bit about the book you've written?
It's a book about Telenor's entrance and exit from Myanmar, explaining a very sad story for Norway and for Telenor, I believe. The intentions were good. They entered Myanmar quite naively, I believe, that they thought really that these generals, President Thein Sein and his ministers, that they really wanted democracy. And, you know, Myanmar at that time, only 7% had access to a mobile phone, and only 29% that had electricity. And Myanmar was a really poor country. And there was a meeting in Bangkok in 2010 where, or 2011, the foreign minister of Norway had a meeting with a representative of the Myanmar government, a secret meeting, where Norway was asked to help with the democratization process and to build peace between the minorities inside of Myanmar. And then, you know, as you know, for Telenor, who was actually quite strong footprint in all of Asia, except from Myanmar, they saw a big opportunity. So they, the head of Telenor had great contacts, head of Telenor Asia had great contacts with the Norwegian government, because when he was young, he was the general secretary of the Labour Party's youth movement, where Mr. Jens Stoltenberg, who in 2011 was prime minister, when he was then the youth leader of the Labour Party, and all the ministers were also in the youth Labour Party at that time. So they knew each other quite well, and Norway started to really push for Telenor and other state-owned companies to actually go into Myanmar. After they negotiated, I think they had some demands to the before they really got engaged, and one of them was to release political prisoners. But and then they started to work to get the state-owned companies also involved in Myanmar. Norway was the first country to lift sanctions. And Norway was the first country to take away all debt that Myanmar owned to Norway, foreign debt. But they were also a front runner on behalf of Myanmar to make all Western countries reduce the debt by half. So they managed to get the debt reduced by 50%. And they did all of that because they really thought that Myanmar was going to become democratic. However, if you look, what really happened was that, and I think that is a main thing to look at now. After is that you see a country that before 2010. The military transferred 300 state-owned companies and properties to their own military holding companies. They created a constitution that was nothing near the democracy-based constitution. The constitution gave the military all power in the end, which was a big problem throughout the whole 10-year period. So Norway engaged in Myanmar, Telenor engaged in Myanmar with a government that was civil, that was a quasi, what we call a quasi democracy. It's not real democracy, but they really believed that these generals, I met President Thein Sein, all his ministers in the presidential palace in Naypyidaw. And when you meet them, you know their history, you know what they did during the student uprising in 88, you know how they handled the Safran revolution, you know that they are responsible for thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people throughout half a century. And now they are changed clothes from put their uniforms back in the closet and took on some civil clothes and said they would like to have democracy within 1 year. You know, and Norway, actually the Norwegian politicians, they really believed it. And I think that was a big, big mistake because the constitution did not allow for Aung San Suu Kyi to become president. She had, it was a tailored, we all know it was tailored so that she would never become president. And they had the 25% of the seats in the parliament that could veto everything at, in the end anyway. And they also had the minister of the border police, the defense, the internal ministry, you know, all of the central ministries. So they, so it was, yeah. It was not not you could win with 100% and you didn't really decide anything in the end. So I think that that was something that was quite obvious if you and you should have been more skeptical in the when you decided to engage both Norway but also its state-owned companies.
And so let's look at this a little bit. So first and foremost, the situation of Telenor itself, because you're talking about state-owned, and I want to make sure that we're using the correct terminology. I want to make sure that it's very clear. What is the relationship between the company Telenor and the government of Norway?
Telenor was 100% state-owned until the 90s, and then it was they decided to open up so that about 45% was traded on the stock exchange and still 55% was owned by the Norwegian government. So this they had a monopoly, complete monopoly situation in Norway for many years. And then the government allowed for competition. And but Telenor is a big company that decided when it went private, they wanted to go abroad also to expand and make deals. So they operated in Russia, in Ukraine, in all of these different countries, and even Asia. And they often did it, and India they did, and they often did it with in partnership with others, their partners were not only clean, very clean companies, and they ended up often in scandals. So you have a lot of these scandals also I describe that in my book, ending up in corruption and different problematic situations for a Norwegian state-owned company. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's ostensibly this is a publicly traded company, but it is still functionally controlled by the Norwegian government.
Absolutely.
Then this becomes a little bit more complicated. To what extent is Telenor allowed to make independent decisions? A government ministry has to do what the government instructs it to do. Telenor, would it still function like a private company, which just happens to be majority owned by the government, or does it receive instructions from the government it has to follow?
Yeah, that's a good thing you ask about, because the Norwegian government are very clear on that. In normal cases, they say it's the responsibility is on the board and management, and they are basically more of a passive owner. Not very active, but they engage in electing the board members. They engage in different, Norway ratified both the OECD guiding principles on responsible business and human rights. And Norway also ratified the United Nations principles on responsible business and human rights. So these are guidelines that the Norwegian government and state-owned companies has to follow. So it's a special responsibility when you engage in countries where risk of human rights abuses are higher then you have a more responsibility to be aware of how you do things, etc. So the thing here is that in Norway we have two type of laws. We have one ownership guidelines that the parliament gives to the ministry, or to the ministry. So these guidelines is actually saying that, you know, you should not normally engage and tell or instruct these companies, but you should be a kind of a responsible owner to the companies, but not, it's up to the board and management to do it normally. But the thing is that when it's an unnormal situation, like it developed in Myanmar, they had the opportunity, of course, because they owned 55% of the company, so they could also say that this is not a normal situation. When we get after the coup, you know, we will get more into that. But it's kind of course they can do it. They have the majority, but their policy is basically not to do it in normal situations.
And so the reason that I need to understand this is because the decision for Telenor to go into Myanmar or to go into any country, if the decision is being made on the company side, one would imagine the predominant motivating factor is, can we turn a profit? Can we be, yes, an ethical business, but can we be a profitable business in this country? But if the government is getting involved in this decision, then the question becomes, well, would this Norwegian company's involvement in the country achieve Norway's political aims? And so my fundamental question is, do you think or do you know whether the decision of Telenor to go into Myanmar was more motivated by Telenor, the company, thinking that it can increase its profit and its business, or whether this was motivated more by the Norwegian government thinking that it can use Telenor as an instrument to help achieve its political goals?
I really believe it's the first, that it was a virgin market. It was a huge mm-hmm. opportunity. And I think both Telenor and the politicians understood it. And they want, mm-hmm. and also, of course, a side effect was that everybody got access to mobile telephones at a good price. You at that time, a SIM card cost $200. It was super expensive to use a mobile telephone inside of Myanmar, and you only could use it in the, I think, around the Yangon and Naypyidaw. Yeah. But it was super expensive, and I remember that there are a lot of telecom companies that could offer telecom, these type of services inside of Myanmar. So I mean, it's not like Norway had monopoly on it, like Elon Musk has on Starlink. This is, you know, base stations, you know, antennas, and to set up so that it covers all the areas, and you know, work that countries are doing all over the planet. So I think that of course, good communication is good for the democracy movement. You have access to the internet, the outside world, which is very, very good. But there was a lot of suppliers that could offer that. And remember in 2010 and 11 and 12, when the government of Myanmar started to plan for mobile communication and new mobile communication telecom law, the Norwegian government and Telenor got the Norwegian Post and Tele Authority, the Norwegian Post and Tele Authority, to actually go down to Myanmar and help the Myanmar government to establish good laws and regulations for the telecom industry. And then Telenor it was 88 other companies applying for a telecom license inside of Myanmar. And Telenor and a Qatar company was the two companies that actually got a license. And because Telenor was owned by Norway Norway is, is well known around the world for its Nobel Peace Prize, its work around the world on human rights and peace building work. Norway, the Myanmar people trusted Telenor. The democracy movement trusted Telenor as a supplier, so most of them chose Telenor as their supplier when they went live in 2014. They had, I think, within the first 6 years, they had more than 20 million clients. So it was like this deep, you know. It was super super quick. An exponential increase in revenues, an exponential increase in users. So, yeah.
Yes. And I wonder why they would have chosen Telenor. Like, Telenor obviously comes with a lot of advantages. It's a very well-established international brand. It has a lot of expertise, a lot of know-how. But you contrast it with the predominant competition. Domestically, you have Mitel, which was in large part owned by Viettel, which is the Vietnamese government's telecommunications enterprise. And we have Ooredoo, which, as you point out, is a Qatari company, where, let's just say very bluntly, human rights legislation is not as much of an impediment to the governments of these countries as it would be to Norway.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting that Norway, out of what you say, 88 companies putting in tenders, Norway is one of the few that actually is given that opportunity. I wonder if there's any insight into the decision-making process. Was there something to sweeten that deal?
Well, that is from what I hear from people inside that knows a little bit about this process, is that because that Norway was so helpful, you know, in many ways to the generals or former generals, the government, it was kind of a gift. I that's what we have. It was this pre-decided, many say. But because remember, Norway was the first one to lift sanctions. Norway was the first one to actually take away every, while the other countries reduced the national debt of Myanmar to half, Norway took everything. $3 billion. They just took away, you know, in one one go. So Norway was very, very helpful, and it worked to make the other European Union countries to lift sanctions as well, which they did. And it also worked to help get rid of the international debt on a bigger scale than Norway itself. So Norway was very, very helpful supporting the goals of the military. And remember, the military government, which was civil at that time, they also was concerned about their dependence on China. They wanted less dependency on China at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a very cynical question, but I do wonder: is the money that Telenor made in Myanmar during the years of its operation greater than the amount of foreign debt that Norway forgave Myanmar?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the revenues were $800 million a year in dollars. So they had I think they paid out 3.5 billion Norwegian kroner, which is about $350 million in dividends, and I think it was a very profitable business for Telenor and Norway, but of course the coup made a stop to that profitability. Yeah, and I think that's the reason. And they, you know, when Telenor decided to pull out after the coup, they decided to move out and Yeah, there is actually a case going on now in Singapore where Telenor has sued the government of Myanmar for more money because they sold Telenor Myanmar for $105 million, and it was a very cheap price. But they got $105 million when they sold it to this military linked company, and that was the tragic that it ended by being owned by a military linked company inside of Myanmar after the coup. But they but the revenues that they the potential revenues. Everything there was looked fantastic during the first 10 years. It was amazing.
I mean, I can imagine. But so it paints a very cynical picture, though, of a government who, on the surface of it, the Norwegian government's leading countries to say, hey, we need to help this country, that the military is trying to change direction. They're trying to democratize. They're trying to go more civilian. And let's forgive debt. Let's lower the sanctions, da-da-da-da-da. But then if we look a couple of years down the road, it seems almost like those were, I'm not saying necessarily calculated steps, but those were definitely gifts that the Norwegian government gave to Myanmar, for which they were then very well rewarded in a very exclusive, very profitable business venture.
Yeah,
it looks a little bit shady if we look at it this way.
Yes, I look at it this way, and I think it's I look at actions. I mean, we live in a world where we know that democracies are on reverse. It's a big problem, and I think you need leaders with principles. You should get real proof before you actually give. If Norway said, remember when Telenor entered Myanmar, they got their license. They did two things. First of all, they accepted the license without a word of privacy protection. Not a word. It was not a privacy law at all inside of Myanmar. Secondly, they paid $500 million as a license fee to this government. And this government is known for its corruption, its human rights abuses, all of this. Has a long history of all of that, and it was still torturing going on in prisons during all years, you know. So I think that we did not when you enter, they should have been much more clearer on to change the law so it was real democracy, I think.
Yes, and I think because earlier on you were saying that they were going in with these intentions, this positive, you know, good faith. And I've been listening to a couple of other interviews that our platform has been doing with Norwegian commentators. And the theme seems to come in that a lot of people in the Norwegian aid space, political space, development space had optimism and they had good faith. And they thought, well, the military is trying to turn around, trying to make a change. And the thing is, Telenor came into Myanmar in 2014. This is during the Thein Sein government, who was, he was a general in everything except paper. He resigned, but he was still a general. This is before the actual victory of the NLD government that everyone remembers and everyone celebrates. So at this time, when they entered, there was not even a certainty in the international community that the upcoming elections, the 2015 elections, would even be respected by the military. There was genuine fear that they would reject the results of the election and, you know, arrest Aung San Suu Kyi and the NLD leaders. And as you say, the constitution was written and passed in 2008 in the wake of Cyclone Nargis. So this was known. This was fact. anyone from the outside analyzing Myanmar would have to look at this and say, this is currently a country with a very militarist constitution that guarantees the military maintains power even in democratic elections. And this is a country that has no respect for the outcome of democratic elections. And it is a country that is headed by a civilian government that is actually a military dictatorship. Under these circumstances, what would be the cause for optimism? What would be the reason for the Norwegian politicians and aid workers and development workers and corporate investment experts say, you know what, we think this country is opening up. We think this is a safe place, an ethical place, a stable place for us to invest.
Yeah, and I don't really understand it because I remember meeting the Norwegian diplomats in 2011, and they told me that they did not believe that Aung San Suu Kyi, after all these years in prison, had any more support, you know, and in the Myanmar, they believed that the drivers for change, the drivers to make the necessary changes, was coming from the Thein Sein government rather than the democracy movement. And I remember I was quite upset by that when I heard it from this diplomat that was at the Norwegian embassy responsible for Myanmar, and I couldn't understand it because from what we saw in the and the people we met, it I remember when we were driving to Aung San Suu Kyi's house and we gave the address to the taxi driver, he looked at it, looked at the address and said, "Mama, you are going to Mama." And, you know, she had amazing support. But somehow the Norwegian government got the impression that the military really wanted democracy rather than money and power. So and new technology and modernize the society, that's what they wanted. They didn't want the people to decide. They wanted more power to themselves. And this was a very clever way to get it. And I think the Norwegian government and diplomats were quite naive in their... And I really don't get how... Because Aung San Suu Kyi was very clear in all meetings she had with the foreign diplomats and business people. She said she wanted, first of all, responsible businesses. She wanted businesses that was established that established in Myanmar to understand what country it was, how unstable it was. She always said she was cautiously optimistic. She was very eager that all the countries used their power and that they to push for changes in the constitution before doing major investments. But somehow I believe that her people, the democracy movements, remember, all of them had been in prison for many, many years, most of them, you know. They had, and after being in prison, you don't have the right to education. You have difficult getting a job. So when the Norwegians came in, well-educated, all of that, maybe they found themselves, maybe they found them it somehow easier to discuss and plan and all of this with these military people being having a lot of experience in efficiency and all of this, and they were talking the right way, you know, rather than all these people being spent years in prisons. My friend that I met in 2012, his name was Kujimi, and he just came out of prison, and he was, and I never forget the first this meeting with Kujimi, and he told me that he was arrested first time in 1989, and was and he had I think he had 4 or 5 years in free before he was arrested again, and then he was in prison until 2012, and we were same age, and he at that time he had spent more time in prison than being free in his life, And he was a peaceful guy, really nice person, who only worked for democracy and freedom. That, you know, he wanted his daughter to live in a free Myanmar. He wanted, you know, and but he was peaceful. But still, these military guys made him a verdict of 65 years in prison just to organize protests, you know. So, so, and of course, they lack education, maybe they lack work experience, but they have the right values. And that's more important, actually, in this situation, is to have people with the right values. And then all of the international community could actually help them rather than work with the wrong guys, you know. They could help them to become more efficient, more educated, more, you know, and give the support that way. And also be very, very clear towards the military at what is needed for us to get engaged. We want privacy laws. We want an exit opportunity if there is a coup. The probability for a coup was, as you said, always there. It was kind of likely that a coup could happen. So, but there were no plans, nothing in of this in the license agreement or anything. So that is a big disappointment, actually, because Norway is quite experienced in all type of different countries, you know, with their diplomats and everything. So, I think this is the Telenor story is the largest scandal in Norway, but it's under the carpet. Nobody wants to tell who knew what at what time, etc. But it ended very, very, very sad and serious. What happened was that when the coup happened, the military came to Telenor and asked for very sensitive telecom data of their users. And these users are people from the democracy movement. It was not, you know, shop thefts, these type of crimes. This was they wanted to the military wanted to arrest the opposition and find them. So after the coup, a lot of these democracy activists and they went into hiding. Like we did in Norway during Second World War, we did the resistance from different apartments and same with them. They went into hiding and started to do some resistance work there. And then the military wanted, of course, to find them. And telecom data was very efficient. Because then you could ask for last location, you could ask for call history and contact list, all of this. So Myanmar now disclosed that they had actually seen these documents, and they disclosed that Telenor shared data more than 200 times, and in each list, it was hundreds of people sometimes, you know. So this might be, it might be thousands of people that Telenor shared data about. And of course, you don't come back the 20th time or the 21st time or 24th times if it's not of any use. So you come back if it's efficient. And the military came back very many times to Telenor for telecom data, and Telenor complied. And when they were confronted by Myanmar Now journalists, they said that to not comply, they didn't say they did it, but they said to not comply with authorities' demands would put our employees at not acceptable risks. But I believe that was also big question marks, because you know, I'm sure that the employees did not want to share data about their people, you know. So it led to arrests. So they of course, the democracy movement might look at the employees as traitors that are in a company sharing data with the government also. So it's not that easy and straightforward, I believe that. So what I think is that Telenor should have done the same as they did in Kabul when Taliban was coming into Kabul. You saw all the pipes, it was smoke, you know, they burned documents. They burned documents like crazy. And of course, at the night of the coup, they should have clicked a red button. All data disappeared up in the sky into Norway. And they should destroy everything on ground and say, we are not contributing to human rights abuses. But they didn't. They kept everything intact. Everything, all the data, about 19 million people. Sanctioned intercept technology, surveillance technology, they kept intact. It was there. And it ended up being sold to a military-linked company. So that in my book, I write a lot about this because that's the core. Because I was contacted in 21 by my friend in Norway that he has also been more than 10 years in prison. He was a member of parliament in 1990 election. He is now living in Norway, safe. But he was afraid. He told me that the National Unity Government and they've heard that Telenor was sharing data, and I couldn't believe it when I heard that. And they told me that they also was afraid that to sell Telenor at this, you know, in such a situation. So they actually wanted me to help to work to stop the sale of Telenor Myanmar and also to stop sharing data with the violent military junta. But in the beginning, I remember I could not believe that a Norwegian state-owned company actually would ever do something like this. But when Myanmar now disclosed it and the later sale, it's obvious they did it and they never said they didn't. They just said that it was. Would not that it would lead to unacceptable consequences if they did not comply. So assuming they complied, it affected thousands maybe of people, and maybe somebody was even killed, we don't know. Definitely many people were tortured and arrested, and so this is extremely serious. And Hanne Sofie Greve, she is a Norwegian human rights judge. She has worked as a judge in Strasbourg in the Human Rights Court, European Human Rights Court, and also she has been a judge in the Hague, you know, in the International Tribunal. And so she's very solid. She say that that Norway and you know the government and Telenor could be aiding and abetting crimes against humanity, because she says that it's not any difference from making a bomb to the one who is actually making it explode. So in these situations, you have a big responsibility, actually, not to comply and find other solutions. So which we did not manage to do in Norway, and that is so sad. And I wrote my book because I want an investigation into all of this, because it obviously has a lot of consequences. And I believe that that when the military ask for data about somebody, and they ask from the top down, you know, they ask for the prominent democracy fighters, the member of parliament, you know, leaders of the labor unions, these type of influential democracy fighters, and that's the guys that they really want. So I believe actually my friend and other were on that list, and I would like to know the consequences. And this is the shameful part that I believe it's not you know, it's not very dignified, or, you know, when you end up in a situation and you do something like this, you need to investigate and you need to try to repair the consequences. In the Norwegian government I have not seen a budget or a project that is actually doing that. And so I am demanding in my book that the whole entry and exit of Telenor in Myanmar and all actions and consequences are investigated very thoroughly by independent investigators. I think that is completely necessary. And I also demand that the Norwegian parliament, they have a committee that is, you know, a control committee that can actually demand these type of investigations. So I hope and believe that will be done. It has to be done. It has to be done. Cannot go without doing it.
And so I want to delve into the ethical side here and also the legal side here, because you made this very good point that the military were coming to Telenor. Telenor shared information with the military, and then this process was repeated again and again and again. And I'm wondering what the relationship is between Telenor and Telenor Myanmar, because certainly Telenor, the Norwegian company, if it were approached by a military regime and asked to hand over the information of Norwegian citizens, they would say no, and they would probably be legally compelled to say no. But Telenor Myanmar is in a different situation. So if it's possible, I would like to understand the relationship between these two entities. And does the Norwegian government put standards of practice, does it impose legal requirements on all of these Telenor subsidiaries around the world to maintain a certain standard of human rights protections, a certain standard of privacy protections? Does a certain degree of Norwegian law still apply to all the different Telenors around the globe, or are they free to do whatever they want?
No, they are not free to do what they want. That's the thing. And Telenor Myanmar is owned 100% by the Norwegian Telenor, you know, the mother company. Mm-hmm. 100%. They had Norwegian CEOs reporting directly to the top level management in Norway and Asia. Okay. So even in the privacy terms and conditions for in Myanmar, it says that the data can be treated in the mother company for, you know, if they wanted to work with the data for marketing purposes, analytics, compliance, whatever, they were allowed to do it. So the thing is that if you are a Norwegian company, state-owned company with state-owned control, you are not supposed to do what they did there, not at all. I'm a businessman, but I see clearly that this is in breach with everything that Norway stands for, actually, what happened there. And that's so sad to see, because I know that these people that are being hurt by this is really brave, and deserve so much more from Norway than this.
And so if this is something that is such a clear-cut violation of what a Norwegian-owned company should be doing, is there actual regress for actual legal action within Norway? Is it possible for people who are in decision-making positions within Telenor Norway or Telenor Myanmar to actually be taken to court and investigated for their part?
Yeah, I mean, for we have, as you know, a legal system, and everybody should be treated the same way. It doesn't help if you are the king, or if you are a minister, or if you are a CEO. It doesn't help. The law is same for everybody. So if you break the law, you should be punished for it. And that is, of course, but if you hide all the information and you nobody is telling you know, you put everything, you dig it down. How is it possible to actually evaluate after? We know this happened because it has never been denied, and we have people that have seen this, so seen the evidence. So it's just shameful that it's not investigated and it's not more openness about this in Norway. That's what happens with big problems. You know, maybe you try to get the problem away.
But then this becomes a very important question. Is this a case where people in Norway, in the Norwegian government, in the Norwegian legal system are just not interested in investigating something that happened halfway around the world? Or do you think this is a case where people who are well-connected have actually tried to bury this information and prevent the information from being published when it should have been published to protect themselves from legal consequence?
I think it's a combination. The reason why I wrote my book is because I love my country, I love Norway, and I think the only way to learn is to be open and discuss what happened and also repair the consequences if necessary. I'm sure you agree with me, if the military came back 200 times, it must have been kind of efficient. Yes. And if it was efficient, the consequences are really, really bad. Both you and I know a lot of people that has experienced military prisons or the prisons in Myanmar. And it's not nice prisons. It's terrible prisons. And they Myanmar now actually said that a lot of these numbers on the list that they took to Telenor, these numbers came out through torture. So they arrested people and then they tortured them, and then they got their contacts and numbers, and then they went back to Telenor and got new, and then they made new arrests. And that's the picture that Myanmar now is painting of this. And this is the kind of grotesque truth. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that this happened.
It is absolutely, it's insane to think about this. And so I imagine then that the actual details of how things were happening behind the scenes during, like in the period after the coup, but also the actual sale of Telenor and the handover of the infrastructure, the handover of the data, I assume the information about this has not been publicly released. How much do we know? Do we know whether Telenor made any attempts to encrypt these data, whether they made any attempts to make it difficult for the military to access this infrastructure after the sale? Or what do we know, if anything?
We don't. We from what we have heard, is that all data was intact, and also the sanctioned surveillance. We have not heard that they destroyed or deleted. On the contrary, we heard that it was impossible for them to do that. That's what they write in the newspapers and how they answer. So the thing is that it's out in the open that they had to sell. And this is also actually, I cannot believe it, because their argument for selling Telenor Myanmar was that the military demanded that they activated the surveillance equipment that was actually sanctioned by the EU, but Telenor installed it in 2018. But they didn't activate it, and this is super serious technologies that is super dangerous, because it's technology that can listen in on calls and messages in a whole network at the same time, and then it collects regime critics. And you can actually go out and make arrests directly, and you can sit on the defense ministry or this type of police or wherever and listen in on calls as they happen. And this is what we call in the Western countries, we call it lawful intercept technologies. But, you know, in regimes that are violent and brutal, and this is deadly. So when the military asked Telenor to activate it, Telenor said no, we don't activate it. It will be against our sanctions. Yeah. So we have to sell, and then they sold to somebody that is willing to activate it. You know, so instead of, and that's what I don't understand, because it doesn't make them any less responsible, you know. So, okay, I'm not going to shoot you, but I will hand over my gun to somebody that is willing to do it. I cannot, you could never do that, you know.
Yeah. Of course. And it's kind of ridiculous, because you talk about the Afghanistan example, and I wonder what is the difference? Like, why would Telenor in one of these instances obviously and willfully attempt to sabotage the incoming dictatorship regime, and in the other situation apparently do everything that the regime asks of them completely in accordance with the regime's laws, even if that is potentially in violation of Norwegian laws and definitely Norwegian principles? Why were these two cases treated so differently?
Yeah, no, it's strange. I just think this whole situation for a country and a company like Telenor and a country like Norway is very embarrassing, actually, how it was possible to end up like this. And of course, you know, they entered in 2014. In 2014, President Thein Sein promised to sign the anti-torture convention of the United Nations. He never signed it. He never implemented privacy laws. You are using words now that you say the new dictatorship. Remember that this was not a new dictatorship. He was always in charge of the parliament and in the end, you know, this general. And also remember, you had they put away the parliament president, Sveaman. Was put away kind of violently with a lot of military in front of his house. This was in 2015. In 2017, they created the Rohingya crisis, which was terrible. The military is pure military responsibility. So it was so many instances during this time that should have made a Norwegian clever, well-educated leader inside of Telenor or even in the foreign ministry to say that, hey, what do we do if there is a coup? How do we protect our customers? And that is what I don't understand. That's totally, totally irresponsible. It's not worthy of Norway, you know, not to think about these things. Mm. So that was what disappointed me most, is that we obviously did not have a plan B. And it was kind of a likely scenario that the military was going to do something, you know. They've shown over the past 10 years that they didn't want to change the constitution. They've shown it. And, you know, the Minister of Industry, Oso Tane, who was the Minister of Oso Tane, he was the Minister of Industry and also the Chairman of the Investment Commission. And the Norwegian diplomats had a lot to do with him. He wrote a great book in 2018 thanking the Norwegians diplomats for their fantastic collaboration and help. And then after the coup in 2021, he wrote a new book where he said that the coup was fantastic and it was what he called it the Independence Day. It was necessary, and he accused the National League for Democracy to cheat in the election, which is totally rubbish and bullshit. Mm-hmm. So these guys, you just cannot be trusted. I mean,
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, we should have known this. Like, I mean, most of us did know this. So it's very upsetting.
Yes, it's upsetting. But we need to find out the consequences. And that's what, and also we all know that national unity government really need help. They really need help to take down the regime and to win. And for that to happen, they need financial support and they need moral support from the international community. And even and that's what I feel sad about that as well, because Ukraine takes a lot, they deserve a lot of attention, and I'm not saying that, but it takes a lot of that tension away from Myanmar. And they both of them deserve a lot of attention. And in both cases, Russia and China is kind of playing with kind of responsible. So Russia and Putin is supporting the military in Myanmar, done it over many, many years. China as well. China play a little bit here and there, but still, and in Ukraine they are attacking the civil or the country. So I think that for Norway has great contacts with generals from before. Instead of pulling out, we should use that contacts now. We should spend at least as much time and money as we did selling Telenor into Myanmar to free Aung San Suu Kyi and the 28,000 political prisoners. Mm-hmm. Norway should engage very, very actively, actually, because we have all the contacts. But we are not. And I think, I'm afraid that the whole Telenor case also made it kind of shameful. So maybe that also works so that they don't do anything, you know? Maybe it's better to stay away. We give our support through the United Nations rather than direct, that we engage directly. But I think we should engage directly.
Mm. Yes. I mean, if the Telenor thing is embarrassing, if it is shameful, then it stands to reason that the government and Telenor as a company should be looking for opportunities to rectify the damage that has been done rather than avoiding the country and avoiding the resultant crisis. Yeah. But I think we should take a moment to question in the spirit of fairness and goodwill, whether prior to the coup, whether the involvement of Telenor as a rival to MPT, which is entirely military owned, as a rival to subsequently Mitel, which is largely military owned and Vietnamese owned, and as a rival to Ooredoo, whether the involvement of Telenor in Myanmar did in fact bring about positive outcomes in terms of empowering the people, giving them access to telecommunication, giving them access to the internet. I know Telenor sponsored at least one event for Wikipedia editors for the Myanmar language to try to motivate the spread of information and the access to free information. So the question still, I think, needs to be posed. Did Telenor achieve some good prior to the coup?
Yeah, I'm sure they did. And I'm sure intentions was there to do a lot of good. So it's not about that. It's more about what they did after. And I think that there's a big problem that is overshadowing all of the good things that they did. Because I'm not, you know, in this situation, you cannot really focus too much on good things. You know, you have to look at the realities, and the realities is that Telenor is not any longer inside of Myanmar. They sold the company with the data, with the surveillance equipment to a military-linked company. They betrayed Myanmar, is what I believe, and you can be really nice to get revenues of 800 million. Wouldn't you be nice?
Yeah,
you would be very nice if you can have the potential of $800 million in revenues. So, in the end, it's about principle, it's about moral, it's about ethics, and they failed on all of those inside of Myanmar. They left the country left the data and their users behind, the users that trusted them, and they have not investigated, I believe, after. They have not investigated and being open about how many people, what happened to these people, what happened to their families. I mean, we are talking about a multinational company with hundreds of billions, you know, they have enormous revenues. And as you know, in this situation, the Myanmar people, they don't have too much. And they have big problems. So I think, you know, if I were in Myanmar and had revenues of 800 million and I had all of these people trusting me and I had an exit in this way, I would do a lot of work after in order to repair and try to, you know, try to both explain and understand how did we end up here in this situation, and why was this the only way to handle it in that situation, and what should we do differently? And unless you have an open discussion about that with independent advisors, all of this, how can you improve? How can you make sure this will not happen again? It's the outcome is totally unacceptable. Totally.
Absolutely. And I think beyond just that, I think the going forward, one of the big questions is there any potential for an investigation to be launched, not, you know, purely into what did Telenor do and whether or not it was completely legal, but the question of what has been the negative impact of this? Because you and I can conjecture, and it is very, very likely that as a result of the data that were released to the military, people would have been arrested, they would have been likely tortured, likely killed. But is there any chance for an investigation, a formal government investigation, to determine whether Telenor's decision to comply with the military can be proven to be linked to imprisonments and deaths?
That is what we need to find out. Because if it's linked, it's absolutely a big case against Telenor and Norwegian state. And I assume it can be linked because from what I really believe that the military would never go back 200 times to get information unless it was linked. So but you cannot get this information out unless you have a proper investigation. So you need an independent proper investigation, and it's tiresome work. But it needs to be done, and you need it to be handled. I mean, in Norway, we are investigating a lot of things, you know, spending in the defense budget, spending in the health sector, you know, things that projects that become more expensive is investigated. Here, we haven't investigated anything. And that is really the paradox, is that Norway is very concerned about being proper, and they put a lot of responsibility and demand reporting from the private sector, and it's all kind of tidy and nicely done, everything. But when it comes to this, nothing has been done, and that's what really is embarrassing for me as a Norwegian Norwegian, actually.
I can imagine it would be, especially the reputational damage of something like this for a country like Norway. I mean, Norway is the sort of country that we would associate with, you know, countries like Switzerland as world leaders in building peace and development and stability and mediating international conflicts. And obviously, you know, Norway is the country that awards the Nobel Peace Prize. The association with Norway and peace and stability and civility is very strong. So a case like this, I think, if it were fully investigated and if it were simply known to a wider audience that decisions were made selfishly, that engagement with the Myanmar government of the time was not altruistic, it was not purely done out of a belief that engagement is going to lead to democratization, but it was done in a belief that engagement would lead to lucrative business opportunities. I think that would definitely be embarrassing, and that would definitely be very impactful.
Yeah, thing is that the world experts on this, they already seen what happened. They already know about this, and they already say that Norway's moral capital was totally spent in Myanmar. So the international experts, they say that this is just terrible what happened and how yes. it has been handled. So in a way now it's I actually challenged Telenor, and I think you should call them up and you should talk to them about this. You know, can they deny that they did not give Kojimis telecom data to the military junta? Can they deny that? Can they confirm it or deny it? Ask them. You know, nobody asked them these questions. Can they deny or confirm that they gave? And you should have different people and just ask them, because nobody asked them about this. You know, it's just like general answers, like it would be lead to unacceptable consequences not complying. Okay, so maybe you comply then, and if you complied, can you deny or confirm that you share data about these individuals? And you should. And there are 80 National League for Democracy politicians, member of parliaments, that are in prison right now. 80. Aung San Suu Kyi is one of them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, and it's thousands, it's 28,000 political prisoners or something inside of Myanmar. And of course, it should be investigated. They should say, did you share their data? And I'm sure that there are international organizations that has the list of everybody that has been arrested there. I'm sure.
I mean, hopefully there would be, but I mean, it being a war zone, this is my fear when it comes to the question of investigation. Until the conflict ends, it would be very difficult to get clear information. It would be impossible to send investigators to the country to speak to people. And I suppose in a sense, if there has been wrongdoing, if there has been even illegality, the fact that there is a conflict continuing in Myanmar makes it very difficult, if not impossible, for a proper legal investigation and a legal process to take place, because the collecting of evidence, the collecting of witness testimonies would be impossible for the interim. So I do wonder whether there is actually any hope of a formal inquiry into this issue until the Myanmar conflict ends, and at the moment it seems the conflict will continue for some time.
Yeah, but just think about this list that Myanmar now has seen. You know, it's lists, call the request list about data. All of these lists, I'm sure they have been electronic as well. You know, it went to Telenor Myanmar. They must be stored somewhere. If you are a responsible business and you want to take responsibility, Telenor ASA, you know, the mother company, should have them. So I just wonder if they do. And I actually asked the judge that I told you about earlier. I asked her, you know, if they don't have this, all the lists, how is that regarded? And she said that is regarded very, very serious. Because if you somehow destroy the list or you don't have these lists, it's... you are trying to hide the realities. You are trying to not take responsibility, and that's also very serious. So it's super important, I think, to secure evidence. And we can secure evidence, and the proper committees or investigative committees could have collected all of that information, and at least you know a lot of things, and then you can start... slowly to investigate. But right now, nothing is being investigated. Nothing is going on.
It's depressing, but we will have to see how...
But have you asked Telenor about this ever?
I have not, no. No, our platform has not. Well,
No, I don't think they have received these questions, and I think it's time that they actually get them.
I agree. And hopefully as well with this interview happening and with other discussions that we're trying to have right now with the Norwegian governments and corporate spheres involvement with Myanmar, hopefully there will be more attention and more focus, and there will be more people calling and more people making these inquiries. And hopefully the government can also be pressured to take action. Although, correct me if I'm wrong, the current government in Norway is the same ruling party that was in power at the time that that Telenor went into Myanmar,
yeah,
correct?
So that's correct. And that's also so shameful because they could have easily started an investigation many years ago. They have not done it. And they should definitely do it, but maybe they are afraid of consequences as well. You know, this has big political implications. If all of this is proven, you know, then it's big scandal. So, but it should they should do the parliament should investigate, and Telenor itself should have started an independent investigation. But I've never heard about that at all. And I tried to find out. So, no.
And we'll have to follow up, and we'll have to try to pose these questions to people who are closer to these organizations to see what their justification is.
Yeah.
We'll have to see the direction that takes.
Yeah, I would like to say that, you know, the main character that you follow in my book is the person that I met in 2012, the student leader from the 88 movement, Ku Jimmy, who had been more in prison than free in his life. I know today that he used a Telenor SIM card all years until he was arrested. And he was hanged in the Insein prison in July 2022. And I think he and all the very, very brave Burmese democracy fighters, they deserve help from all of us that is living in free countries. So we all should push to find the truth about what happened there, number one. Number two, we should also engage in helping with finances and needs that the Myanmar people need in order to win over the military. I think that is a responsibility that the Western countries should really engage in, and I hope they do.
Where Myanmar's crisis has largely faded from the headlines, critical voices and perspectives are often left unheard. And that's where we hope to come in. Through this humble platform, we're trying to provide something unique, an opportunity to share important experiences, insights, struggles, and perspectives in depth and in a way that few other media sources offer. Our content not only keeps the sputtering global conversation about Myanmar alive, but it also brings much-needed attention to those now fighting for their freedom and dignity. So if you value this work and the perspectives we're offering, please consider supporting us. Your contributions help us to continue to amplify those voices and provide the world with the coverage Myanmar so desperately deserves. Visit insightmyanmar.org/donation to stand with us.
Yarananda, Diana Nangana, Yarananda, Yaranampo, Yaranam.